Good morning, listeners, and welcome to Mortgage Mag for another week here at RTR FM 92.1, the sound alternative. And you have me today, Nick Abraham, along with Jody Hoffman. Howdy, Jody.
Howdy, Nick. It's a long way in between our last broadcast together. Probably about a year.
It seems like ages.
It does seem like ages, but it's nice to be here. I've had a couple of yarns with Jim this year, which has been good, but good to be back in the studio with you, Nick.
Oh, it's lovely to have you back here. And what can I say? Just a little bit sort of shocked here at the moment, just to see you, because I know we've been through a bit of a, both have been through some sorry business stuff over the last 12 months and that so, but we're back on our feet and hopefully working through what we have to work through to bring some good news to our listeners out there in Noongar Radio and also the Great Southern Radio.
Yeah.
Country.
And looking forward to the next hour. We're going to be having a yarn with Jim, who's in Kalgoorlie at the moment. But there's a national newspaper called the National Indigenous Times. And Jim had an opinion piece in there in recent weeks. And just a really poignant piece about, you know, his family situation, his involvement in all of the work that he does for our Stolen Generations mob. Jim's going to join us on the phone just to talk about some of those thoughts, because it's interesting, you tune into Mortgage Mag and you hear you guys sort of laughing away and talking about all the great stuff that's happening in the community, but also touching on some of the very moving stuff that's happening as well. And sometimes it's easy to forget that, you know, outside of the studio, both yourself and Jim are very, very busy, leading very active lives and just tireless work with and for our community.
Well, yes, Jody, and it'll be very interesting, because Jim thought he was going to get away for the week, but you know, he's up there in Kalgoorlie country there. But we'll catch up with him and have a bit of a yarn about his piece. And I read that; it sort of made a lot of sense to me, and you know, I could feel that frustration and hurt and pain. But I don't want to steal any of his thunder about working in environment for our communities.
I will mention one piece of what he'll be speaking about, because of course Tuesday was Anzac Day, and a day of reflection of everybody who fought in all theatres of war. But you know, thinking of our Indigenous servicemen and women who weren't afforded the same rights when they returned. Yes. I did a lot of interviews a few decades ago with some of our Aboriginal men who served, and they said that when they were away, they were just family. There was no black or white. It was everybody just banded together. It wasn't until they returned to home soil that they didn't get the same parcels of land. They didn't get the same treatment. They couldn't go into a pub with their mates that they'd been overseas with. There was just so much racism on their return that just pushed all the hard work under the carpet.
That's interesting, Jody, that, you know, our people went away and fought for this country and for the freedoms and stuff there, but when they came back, they were alienated in their own country. And a lot of people don't understand that. And recently, because of the divide with this, the Voice and that stuff, there's a lot of media personalities that have been utilising this divisional model, especially around Anzacs, for dividing the country even further. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing. We've got a long way to go.
We do. And just wanted to mention one of the pieces that's mentioned in this this opinion piece by Jim, which talks about his father, the late Arthur Morrison. And he fought in the Second World War and ended up in the notorious Changi prisoner of war camp, where he was tortured by the Japanese because they couldn't understand how a black man could be Australian. So this is, this is Jim Morrison that, you know, many of our listeners don't know about, his upbringing. And it will be very interesting to hear from Jim. He's passionate about so many things, and this will be no exclusion either. But while we were talking about Anzacs, I just wanted to give special mention to a bloke by the name of John Schnars.
Yes.
John spent many, many years honouring Indigenous war graves. There was people who'd gone off and fought in the war and came back and were in unmarked graves.
Yes.
And he dedicated decades to making sure that headstones were placed on the graves, family could have a little ceremony for their loved one, and finally, you know, years and years on, that they got the recognition that they so richly deserved.
Yes, that's true. Well, well done, John, and you know, thank you for all those efforts that you've done there, and still continuing that process of acknowledging our returned soldiers, the ones that have fought for this country, but don't get recognised in their own country and acknowledged.
This is Mortage Mag. Nick, yes. And Jody with you in the studio this Thursday morning. Ah, the beautiful late Ruby Hunter, and so close, so near. What an extraordinary performer and singer-songwriter she was, and partner to the late Archie Roach.
Yes.
We've been blessed with some incredible people who, in their own unassuming ways, have been life-changing for so many people. What some stories they had to tell.
Yes, and they tell it so beautifully through the music and the likes and stuff, you know, that... We still honour them, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
We still honour them. Right, I think we have Jim. Jim, are you on the line there?
Good morning, Nick. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jim. How are you? You're still out
here in sunny Kalgoorlie.
Kalgoorlie, rightio. Just for our listeners' sake here, Jim, they may not know who you are, but just for the sake of the listeners and the show, just tell them who's your mob and where you're from. Only briefly,
well,
of course, because you elected everybody.
My country for the past... 50-odd years, but my mum of Menang from Great Southern and Goorang, Great Southern also, over Ngawangrup way. But no, living in on Whadjuk, the beautiful Whadjuk country for the past 50 years. So, yes, that's my mob, but probably relate to half the state, but sometimes I wish I was an orphan.
Well...
Jim, we're reading the opinion piece by you in the National Indigenous Times that appeared in recent weeks. And I tell you what, you've covered a lot of issues in a few pages of writing. And we were just mentioning at the top of the show about your dad, Arthur Morrison, and how he fought in the Second World War. And we were talking earlier at the start of the show about Anzac Day and all the contributions that our mob made in the theatres of war, but didn't have that same recognition. What was it like growing up with a father who had spent time in a Changi prisoner of war camp and fought overseas?
Well, I suppose, to put it bluntly, it was traumatic. I mean, Dad carried a lot of trauma from his time in Changi because he was... a different coloured Australian. He was black, he was tortured, and he was tortured by the Japanese prison officers, and I only learned after he passed that from his digger mates who were with him that he was tortured by them, hung up naked and tortured with cigarette butts.
Oops.
So I guess we live with that because he resolved some of the trauma he dealt with. I suppose he was an alcoholic. So that sort of was his way of addressing the trauma. And I guess that's happened to so many of our people that were stolen and or served in the services. So it was a difficult time because when the alcohol was part of the life, it was, I guess, we were terrified because he only saw us as Japanese soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
But in years to come, we overcome that, and Dad sort of resolved some of those issues. There was no services for him. I mean, his army mates were granted land, as it was all returned soldiers, but Dad wasn't eligible. He had to buy land. So he was treated differently. We understood that, you know, there was... wages paid, but he wasn't treated the same upon his return. And I guess that's so many stories we hear of Aboriginal people who fought for the country and weren't treated the same, treated well in the ditches, all the same in the ditches, but coming home there was certainly colour issues as to who our soldiers represented. So, but you know, I can say though that he was a great influence in all of that. In good times, he was always well respected, well dressed. He used to love wearing suits. He was, was traumatised by many deaths of family, and he would go to just about every funeral. And I guess that's left to me now. But no, he was, I don't know whether it was embarrassing or he was so angry that people were dying that were so much younger than him, and he'd been through the war and been tortured and been traumatised by his experience on the Burma Railway. Yet he, so many people were dying of issues that were preventable, diseases that were preventable. You know, so there were some good and bad in the time that he came home. And later in life, when he was a bit older, yeah, he was a different person to what he was when he came home from the war. Of course, I don't remember much of that, but I was young when we were, you know, there was domestic sort of issues which prevented us staying in the house. So it wasn't a good experience, but we had good and bad.
Would he march on Anzac Day, Jim?
Oh, yes. Yes, every year he would march and dress up and polish his medals, and because he had won many medals, of course. But after he passed, the family then took over that tradition. But sadly, the attitudes of a lot of his digger mates were not as nice as it could have been, the way they spoke about Aboriginal people, etc. So there was racism on his return, and that, I guess, played out in that we won't acknowledge Anzac to the extent we should. We know it's on. Some of his children and grandchildren take the opportunity and march when the urge arises. But I guess in later years we've just become partnered up with the Maoris now, although I didn't participate last week or this week. But, the Anzac was a great time for him to remember his friends, but it got a bit jaded after a while since he's passed.
Mm-hmm. This is Mooditj Mag. Nick and Jody with you in the studio today, and joining us on the other side of the microphone from Kalgoorlie is Jim Morrison. Jim, there's a lot of issues that you've covered in this opinion piece that we'll work our way through, but we were talking about your dad, but we couldn't talk about your dad without talking about your incredible mother, Namazie, 95 years old, very powerful Noongar woman who has successfully raised 8 children. You come from quite an extraordinary family, Jim.
Well, Dad lived until about 80, I think. We didn't know his date of birth because in those days it was the 1st of July, but we established his birthday a little later. But my mother will be 96 next week.
Next week.
And, yeah, so has really set trends for us. Both parents lived to good ages. So there's, they had a lot to offer. And I suppose because of their stolen generation background, they persevered and attempted to do the right thing by us. And I think they've done really well. So we stand on their shoulders. And, we've got a lot to be proud of. And we're lucky in lots of respects because, sadly, our people don't live as long as my mother. So she's got a lot of yarns to spin. She's probably the oldest surviving Carrollup native settlement survivor. Younger brother was one of the child artists from Carrollup. So there's some good memories about what happened in those days. And I guess that's given us a lot of grounding from their lives for their children to be leaders in whatever way they could, which is why I decided I should write that piece.
Yes, Jim, and I'm just looking at the second page here where there's a strong fighting spirit that the family have left you through Mum and Dad, and fighting for justice for our people, which, as you mentioned, you've done that for many, many years there now, and there's a statement that goes through that you read about this little piece, and, the first paragraph there from what I'm looking at here is the Uluru statement that you talk about and the likes, and... And how you being a descendant from a survivor of the stolen generations, and how it speaks for the structural nature of problems we experience today, including the rising rates of children removed from their families and communities. Mm-hmm. This is the torment of our powerlessness. So I guess that's still continuing. And we spoke a little bit about on radio last week about with The Voice and the division that's happening, post-politically and I guess throughout the community and stuff there of some of the positive and negative divisional things that is coming out through that. So would you like to just run us through your little piece?
Well, look, it was only recently I was asked to speak at a forum of the Anglican Church and I had to sort of analyse what I'd done. And, it was quite a shock realisation that when I was 18 in 1973, I helped set up the National Aboriginal Consultative Committee in this country, and that was boasted then as being the first black parliament. And, so that's 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was, I can say that I've been involved in leadership for 50 years. So we went from the National Aboriginal Consultative Committee, or the NACC, and at the whim of government, that was, they pulled the pin on that advisory body, 41 people representing 41 electorates around the country. So there was a lot of consultation in ensuring that people enrolled to vote and where the voting booths were, et cetera, et cetera. And then to have a voice nationally in 73, which only lasted three or four years, and then they replaced it with the National Aboriginal Conference. That didn't last long. So the whim of government, it pulled the pin on the funding. And you just go from one national leadership to another. Then became the ATSIC, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission. I stood for the election in the Perth metropolitan area, Kalkanini Regional Council. I got the most votes in the metropolitan area. So therefore, I was a councillor for 3 years. In the second term, I didn't stand. My son did. He got the most votes in the metropolitan area. And then the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission, that didn't last. At the whim of the government, that's been dissolved, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And then from ATSIC, we went to the National Congress of First Peoples, where I was elected into Chamber 1, representing stolen generation issues nationally. But not only that, Nick, Jody, there was many royal commissions that I've been, carefully monitoring, including the Bring Them Home report. And the recent Royal Commissions into Institutionalised Sex Abuse and Aged Care Services, we're monitoring those constantly. I guess the argument for me is the powerlessness of these sorts of Royal Commissions when very few of the recommendations are implemented. I mean, not to forget the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody. Recommendation 339, the final one, was about reconciliation, and all states look at reconciliation with First Nations people. So the point I make, I suppose, is that we've been involved with all these voices, but it's not enshrined in the Constitution. So I'd be encouraging our people to think carefully about what the Constitution can do for us and how things could change. Why are we going cap in hand to government? The Stolen Generations Organisation in this state, they're not guaranteed funding after June. We've been funded in two, three-year cycles, but there's no recognition from the federal government that they'll fund us after June. And I think you would know that I've been a strong advocate for Stolen Generation peoples for lots of years now. So we're going cap in hand. I mean, and as someone said recently, I think of Pat Anderson or Pat Turner said, we're beggars. We're beggars in our own country. Yet you have this sort of situation. There's a double gap. The dominant culture, First Nations people in their stolen generations. There's clearly a second gap. So how are we going to resolve this? We've got to have a voice, and it has to be enshrined in the Constitution. So that's what we're fighting for. So I think listeners need to understand that, and our own communities need to understand that. We can't just keep on doing same old, same old. Things have got to change. We have to do things differently, and we can only do that if our rights are enshrined in the Constitution.
Jim Morrison is our guest this morning on the Mordich Mag program. Jim, you were saying, you've been fighting for justice for over 50 years and, since 1973 when you were just a young 18-year-old. I want to know what an 18-year-old Jim Morrison looks like and acts like. Come on, spill the beans.
Well, Beresford wrote a book of the late Rob Riley, who sadly next Monday would be 27 years, Nick.
Wow. Something like that, yes, Jim.
Yes.
He took his life. And in that book, there'll be a young Jim Morrison with lots of hair, afro, in fact. So yes, in my younger days, I was had lots of hair. I think my brothers did as well, but I'm battling grow hair these days. It's very short and very grey, and I look a bit different to what I look now. But I don't know whether I've still got the same energy. I think I'm fading a little, but I guess, you know, these sorts of things, they really trial you, the areas you're working in and advocating for. I mean, it's it takes its toll, but I think it's things have to change, and I think our world needs to change. Our communities need to understand that there has to be another way of doing things. It's, you know, you just keep on doing the same old, that's the definition of insanity. And that's what the government are doing to us. Now we need to resolve that by having a voice and think about this referendum very carefully, because this state had the worst result for the referendum, and where I'm at Kalgoorlie, has the worst no vote in the country when it was time for the 1967 referendum. So we've got a big challenge, and we've got to really mobilise churches and unions. They're the people that get us over the line. And our own community need to be stand up and say, you know, we need to be counted, we need our voice. And more importantly, we need to be able to say to our white brothers and sisters that the dominant culture, listen, you can't be happy with the way things are going. You can't be happy with your taxpayers' money going down the gurgler every year because things aren't changing. You know, the dominant culture, the 96%, have to be saying to the whole world that we want to change things for the oldest living culture on this planet. And why is the oldest living culture on this planet have so much poverty, so much disadvantage? Well, it will be maintained, and I dread the thought of the referendum not getting through. There has to be a yes vote, otherwise we're just going to go backwards again. And I'll be totally disillusioned. So RTRFM is a strong voice for us, and that they are very supportive in the yes vote, and we need to encourage our listeners also.
Yes, Jim, and I think what I'm hearing from you is you mentioned about all the different unions and the church groups and all those agencies and stuff, and even the radio station down here. But fundamentally, it comes back to the individuals, our Australian brothers and sisters out there, that have to sit back and have a look and be a serious look at this process to see if you want to continue this cycle or do you want to move into a better place, not only for our community, but for the broader community and the nation and that as well.
Yep. We can't go on being a commodity and kicked around like a football. We can't. It has to be, there has to be some self-determination, and we need to get on top of this so that our future generations will have a better life. We just can't go on, as I say, the same old has to change. We have to change the rhetoric, and we need to change it. Our people need to be the leaders. Our people need to have the voice. The voice is not being heard, and things aren't going to change. So the voice, the referendum, I would hope that would happen in this country, and things will change for First Nation people in this country.
Well, there's one saying that just jumps into my head there, Jim, and that's that, it's goodwill. It's goodwill. But also I hear a lot of Australian clichés and whatever stuff that it's un-Australian. And when anything goes wrong or whatever stuff, it's un-Australian, or where someone's been un-Australian or whatever, just things out there. Well, you know, for me, Australians are going to have a serious look at themselves now to think about, is this un-Australian to continue this process of how we keep our First Nations people and our history suppressed?
Yep. Well, it's about truth-telling, and that's probably one of the difficult things that the broader society need to understand. They don't want to hear the truth. And, you know, and we go on and on and on talking about the truth, but it's now time for the truth to be told, and that truth is listened to, and we make a change so that we have a better life for our descendants.
Yes, well,
to generations.
I think we need to clone you, Jim. I think there's not enough Jim Morrisons, and I think that's you know, you've given some really strong points today about the future of this country and what all Australians need to do to actually address that. And Jim, Nick, you said it exactly, you know, stop the oppression and the suppression of our people. And all of those strategies that have been started in the past, Jim, and then they've been canned halfway through, being the most reported on race on the planet, just all these issues. And you'd wonder, how can we still be here in 2023?
Yeah, so true. So things have to change.
Well, Jim, thank you for being on What Did You Make Today? And, you know, you might have got away, but you didn't get away. And it's great that we were able to catch up with you today and talk about this important issue that a lot of Australians are going to be facing for their decision, for the, you know, for the voice and the likes, and for, I guess, better improvement for our country. So thank you, and hopefully you'll have a safe return back home, but also be safe up there in Wongatha country. Thank you, Jim Morrison.
Good. Thank you, Jody. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate your time. Okay, all the best.
He really is an extraordinary man, and dedicates his life now to our stolen generations, as his family was significantly impacted by the policies affecting stolen generations. He has been fighting for justice for our stolen generations people and set up the WA Stolen Generations Aboriginal Corporation and Yokai Healing Our Spirit. Jim Morrison on the other side of the microphone today on Woodich Mag. Olive Knight and Silvery Moon. And I'm sure you've heard Olive here before on the Moodich Mag program. I've seen some film clips of her up on stage singing. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners who aren't aware, she's a Walmajari elder, an international blues and gospel singer, a songwriter, a teacher, a mentor, a human rights advocate and a political activist.
Wow, she wears a lot of hats, but she's got a beautiful voice as well, Jodie. Beautiful.
And she helped to develop the Walmajari Dictionary back in the 1960s and has supported research on understanding, preventing and treating FASD, fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. So she's an extraordinary woman.
Yes. Yeah. We have so many people out there that are doing a lot of good stuff out there for our community, and we have one on the line
very shortly.
Minute. Yeah. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning. How are you today?
I haven't heard that voice for a while now. How are you? You good?
Don't tell Fizz. We saw each other at the Indigenous World Indigenous Tourism Centre.
That was a long time ago. That was a couple of weeks ago. A long time. But anyway, welcome to Moodich Mag with Nick here and Jody and stuff. But before we go any further there, Cheryl Kickitaka, just let the listeners know who's your mob and where you're from.
Very proud Wadjuk Noongar Yorga, but my dad comes from Ballardong country, my grandparents also come from Ballardong country, and on my mother's side they come from Ewart country and also down south, so a bit of a mixture of everybody, but a very proud Wadjuk lady.
Well, welcome to Moodich Mag.
Cheryl, look, we're really keen to talk to you about Mumbaki, a cultural and digital journey. You are the project lead and you're at the School of Education at Curtin University. What is Mumbaki? Firstly, what does it mean?
Okay, Mumbaki is an Noongar word meaning where the rivers meet the horizon. The project is situated in the city of Swan, where I actually live and where I work from, where the majority of Aboriginal people in the state currently live. And in this area here, there are seven water streams that join the mighty Derbal Yerrigan, the Swan River. And so the project's named in regards to the rivers and the traversing of those rivers in the old times of people coming together and, you know, and coming together and seeing an horizon as a tribal mob. So it's on honour of that, but also has sort of connotations today for young kids who, you know, maybe too close to the ground and can't see an horizon in their life. And we're hoping to build them up, you know, learning about their culture and language that has been built by them and their families in their schools so they can become their own beacon and light their way to their own horizon.
So for our listeners, Mumbaki Cultural Learnings is an Australian Research Council and Curtin Uni funded research project which aims to honour and reconnect grassroots Aboriginal knowledges to primary school education. How long's it been in the making, Cheryl?
Oh my gosh. I started this project about 2 years ago, but I've been on this journey for about 20 years. So my interest is in identity and self-esteem and racial coping for young children. And I've built a few instruments over the years, but this particular one is really the culmination of 20 years of work where we're actually putting resources back in schools that have been built by the local Aboriginal people in each of the three primary schools we're currently working in. So it's been 2 years of yarning. That's what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 2 years of yarning, and this actually next week we start implementation of all of the knowledge that people have asked us to put in a program of activity in a school, and we actually roll that out next Monday. So we're pretty excited, you know, pretty excited about it all.
So what will that involve? So let's talk about who are the three schools and what's going to change for the students in those schools once this program's implemented.
Well, for confidentiality, we're not allowed to say what the schools are because it is a research project,
yep.
But they are in the City of Swan. They're a government co-educational state schools, and they're very different in their size and demographics of Aboriginal students. So we have, you know, one that's a large school with small numbers of Aboriginal kids to small schools with large Aboriginal number of kids, and then a middle school that's got a bit of both. So, but basically, over the next two school terms, which is term two and term three, after collecting over 2 years the information that families and kids and teachers expect to be in an Aboriginal curriculum and resources, we have seven themes. And so the first theme next week is Budja, which is place. Then the second theme is Mort, which is people. Third theme is Muditch, which we are terming wellbeing. Sometimes it's not a direct translation, so we've got to get something close. Lesson four is Nunkulkal, which is about living, traditional ways of living. And then in term three, they go to Wankanini, which is languages, Marana, which is art, and Kajining, which is tech, we've called it tech and innovation. So each school will get a in-school lesson once a week. And then the following week, so those lessons are taught by Aboriginal people, by our community partners. And so the classroom teacher will be in the class as a student to learn, listen, and help with duty of care. And the researchers will be there to support the presenters or the facilitators. So after week one, so the talk about Budja, the following week is where the exciting bit is as well. So the following week is still about Budja, which is the first theme, but we're using digital experiences to enhance that person-to-person conversations from the week before. So that means we've got a mobile app that looks at Budja, all the activities around Budja, and we've also got a VR experience where kids put on Oculus sets or 3D headsets and they go into this world. It's like the Mumbaki Quest, actually, and they learn about Budja in the game, and they can only go to a certain part of the game until the following week when it gets unlocked for the second part of the travel. So it's a quest of learning about Aboriginal, all the things I just said, Budja, people, wellbeing, living, languages, art, but it's done in a technological, digital way.
Wow, that sounds very exciting there, Cheryl. And I could just see and just hope that the parents that are coming along are really engaging with us, and the students are engaging with us, but also the other students that the non-Aboriginal students, if they get the opportunity, or even the teachers, to understand and have a look at this process, because it does have a connection to just about every human being, from my perspective.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, the thing is, the Aboriginal students at these schools, their families, who are part of our community elders councils at each of the schools, they and the Aboriginal teachers on those school grounds, we're all huge parts of building, the co-deciding, co-creating and co-actioning what we were trying to put together. The kids particularly really took the digital component and blew with it. There's a lot of gamers out there, and we know that they're great in the gaming area, and just utilising the strengths of our kids and families in this project has been absolutely amazing. The one thing I want to say is the digital component is awesome for kids who are shy, kids who, you know, have got, you know, ADHD or any sort of spectrum, because it really, you know, the VR experiences throws them into a 3D world, and in the 3D world they are bestowed a totem. And the Aboriginal kids, I'm hoping that the parents will give them their totem if they don't have a totem. And then the Aboriginal kids will bestow that totem upon their non-Aboriginal kids who will be in these classes with the help of the teacher. And the totem follows them through the digital quest. So you know, putting our kids prior to place and centering them in terms of their identity, even if they don't know so much just yet, they will. That what this program will do will actually be a catalyst to go, oh my God, I want to know more. And that's, as a pilot, that's what we want. We're hoping that kids will be so excited about coming to these classes, it will change their attitude about school. And it will change their attendance, which means we're hoping that it will improve their self-esteem, their identity, and also some of their outcomes in school itself. So that might take a bit of time to see, but if we can be the catalyst for that to happen, that's all I ask from the project itself. It'll be a win-win for us.
It is so exciting. Nick and I are just sitting here looking at each other, shaking our head and going, how good is this? And Cheryl Kickett-Tucker, it must be amazing to have spent so many years thinking about implementing something like this and then to see it come into fruition with the support of, obviously, a very impressive research team. I've been looking through the list, some incredible names there, but also with the family involvement, the school involvement. I don't think the kids know what they're going to be in for yet.
Oh, the ones of the kids haven't got a clue. But the Aboriginal kids, they all know about it. Like, they're part of our family. They're more. So we actually enact the values and beliefs as a team here. So everybody in our team, we're bestowed a shirt, an amazing shirt that everybody wants, apparently, I've been hearing. And they wear it with pride. I mean, the kids, when we were designing this, we actually took kids out on site and... Look, I know it's a little bit sad, and it was a bit sad for me to know that kids didn't even know who Yagan was, or Yagan Memorial Park, what happened to him. Mm-hmm. We took them out there, and we explained all this stuff. And I tell you, I'll never forget this day. We're standing on top of the hill overlooking the river, and I was sharing what I knew about Yagan, and other people were sharing it. So it was communal way of teaching, right? And then, no lie, I said to everybody, just close your eyes for a moment and just listen to the piece. And this wind swept right up us. And I've got the shivers talking about it, actually. But that spirit was there. Oh, my gosh, it truly was. And I know the kids will never forget that day, because it was, we were in the right place at the right time. It was a good spirit, but we didn't realise how strong it was when we were sharing the story. You know, even us people who are a bit older and wiser, potentially wiser, that we're never to forget that our ancestors and our spirits are always with us, you know, no matter what we're doing, where we're going. And the non-Aboriginal kids are going to learn and see Aboriginal people and kids from a strength-based perspective. And I'm hoping that that it'll draw out our cultural warriors in the schools to keep this going. The legacy of this project is to keep it going beyond our years. And so... it's only a taster. There's not much of Noongar resources around. It's getting there. Like, people are building that. But I'm hoping to give it a big kick in the right direction.
Oh, and look...
proud of it.
This is the exciting thing, Cheryl, because, I mean, obviously when we were growing up, you know, you didn't learn anything about Aboriginal history in the schoolroom, and you know, here we are in 2023 where, you know, children as young as 10 years old can be locked up. That's the age of criminal responsibility in this state, which is extraordinary, and kids are not engaging with school because it's not relevant and it's not teaching them things that will actually make a difference in the rest of their lives. And I think that's what Mumbaki is offering. It's offering people the chance to, you know, feel really strong about their identity and connected to culture and country and kin, but also teaching the non-Indigenous kids of the importance of this culture and it being embraced by everybody.
You're absolutely, absolutely spot on there. Look, we're only a drop in the ocean with this project. There is so much more for us to do. You know, we're looking at Mumbaki 2.0. We've got to look at high school, how we transition into high school and get more into politics. But we do talk about massacres. You know, we do talk about stolen land, stolen generations. We do use those words because the Education Department said we have to be this truth-telling. So we are going to do that. We have got a pack that we're sending out to all parents to let them know that these words will be brought up, that we are talking about this. We have a contingency plan if kids are upset, how to deal with all of that, when and if that happens. But in generally, the whole thing is a very strength-based approach, but there is truth-telling in it, and there has to be. So, you know, I've got to tell you something, though. When we were building this with the kids, we brought them out to the lab at the Design and Built Environment Department at the School of Education, led by Jonathan Pillay and Joel Louie. And the undergraduates there are kids from, young people from lots of different nationalities who've never worked with Aboriginal people before. And all of a sudden, we're in this tiny little lab, crammed in there, Aboriginal, non-Aboriginal, building this stuff, building this digital work. And it was amazing to watch, absolutely amazing to watch. And so, you know, we were talking about holograms and all sorts of things, pretty exciting for the future. There's so much more to do. And we've been embraced really well by our partners, Kudamits Institute, who are delivering this program as part of the Kudamits Institute Primary School Academies. And so we can sit back and conduct our research. The research is really important. So we're going in to look at identity, self-esteem changes, racial affirmation changes. We're looking at the cultural integrity of the school itself. There's no point putting a service in a school if the policies, plans and procedures and people are not culturally secure.
Yes, Cheryl, I think you use those last four P's there. You lose about policies, processes, people, and sometimes the worst P that comes along with the prejudices and stuff there that have been restricting and stopping our children from learning about basically the truth, but also a better understanding if we start to learn about that stuff so that we can make sense of the world that we live in today and so that we can move forward. And, you know, I liked your little comment before about when the kids learn something and they start Europe and say, I want to know more. That's that little pilot light that just about every child or every person has in them. They just need that little pilot light to be switched on to achieve whatever they can achieve. Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Cheryl, look, we'll be thinking of all the kids next week at the three schools. Obviously, you said we can't name the schools because this is part of a research project, but all the very best with it. We'll be thinking of three schools in the city of Swan who will embark on this program next week for the next couple of terms. And I know that, you know, we obviously wouldn't name the children as well, but maybe down the track when they're fully entrenched with it, we could get a couple of the kids to come in and just call them Student A and Student B and talk about how they're enjoying Mumbaki as well.
Actually, I've got a better idea. We laid a rap song to this program.
No way!
I tell you, we just spent some strength this week. We were in the lab, there was some microphone. Oh, let's do a rap song. So we did. We got a video of it. We've got the song, it's been laid. So it'd be great to get the kids in your studio and they can do it like a live thing, you know. They would love to do it, absolutely love to do it.
You just let us know when and we can make it happen.
No worries. Okay. All right, that sounds really good.
Fantastic. But Professor Cheryl Kickett-Tucker from Curtin University, well done, congratulations, and all the best with the Mumbaki cultural and digital journey starting in three Perth schools next week.
Thank you, Cheryl, and keep up the good work, eh?
Thank you, Nick. Thank you. See you soon. Bye.
Yeah, that's Titters, the Koori word meaning sisters, and in an A. And if you've ever been on hold waiting to get through to ab study, that is on high rotation. Titters and coloured stone, bit of Yothu Yindi in there, bit of
Gurumul, so right, when you're on hold you hear all those songs.
Yeah, so any people who've stayed on the line waiting for Centrelink to pick up, you would have you'd be able to sing In and A backwards, I think.
Well, there you go.
Not that I'm doing ab study or any studies at the moment. I think my study years are well behind me.
Through my mind there.
I haven't got the attention span anymore. That was like 30 years ago. I'm a bit too scatty now. I just can't stay focused too often on the one thing, unfortunately.
I hear what you're saying, and it's very difficult, eh?
You did studies as a more mature gent. How did you find it?
It's a challenge, but a bit like what Cheryl said, that, you know, when you're looking at something and you're seeing something that you have a connection with and you want to know more, so you continue then to track and wanting to find out more and more and more, because there's a lot out there that we don't know. And the more we know, the better we get to understand it and look at ways of how we can change the course for the future. So yeah, I'm still very, very heavily entrenched in the study cycle, and perhaps down the track I could enlighten some more news about my journey, but we'll keep that on hold for now. A bit like the schools down at Weeb Country in Midland area, eh?
Yeah. Oh, who knows? I might go back one day and do something. Something. Keep me a bit focused, which is a good thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I tell you, one thing that is great to do is to get out and go to some theatre. And here in Western Australia, I've been with the festivals on and all that, some amazing stuff hitting our stages and so much talent. And, you know, we have the course out at WAPA, the Aboriginal Theatre and mm-hmm. Performance course happening out there. But there's a really exciting play that's starting in a couple of days, Nick, and it's presented by Black Swan and the Blue Room Theatre. And it's a little play called The Bleeding Tree. So I thought we just might have a bit of a listen to its director, Ian Michael, to find out more about this. So, The Bleeding Tree, and it's on from the 29th of April until the 14th of May, presented by Black Swan and the Blue Room Theatre at Studio Underground. And Arts Hub said that it is a journey that is visceral, demanding and has lasting effects. Some great actors in there as well, and that was Ian Michael, the director of The Bleeding Tree. So keep an eye out for that. I know that tickets are selling very, very well. So you might want to check it out if it sounds like something that you'd be interested in going and seeing. And Nick, can you believe that the hour is almost up?
Well, where did it go?
Where does it always go?
You make it interesting and you make it go very fast. And of course, with our two interviewees today, that, they both can tell a yarn and a story,
yeah.
and it's great, and the music. But you know, Mornich Mag has come to an end for another week, and hopefully our listeners out there will tune in again next week. And when it's replayed back again on their part of country, throughout Noongar country and Minang country down the Great Southern. So, Jody, what do you reckon? Shall we say goodbye? And
we should say goodbye. But I think I'll just remind our listeners as well that if you can't always catch Mornich Mag when it's on a Thursday between 11 and 12, you can jump on the RTR website and listen to the programs back. And I was in Victoria recently and I listened to you and Jim on the other side of the country, and it was beautiful to hear, and it was just, you know, a comfortable pair of slippers slipping into the show from the other side of the country. So letting our listeners know as well, you don't have to be in Perth and glued to the radio exactly when we go to air, but you can listen in later.
Well, thank you, Jody, for filling in today, and we'll go out with a ropery from King Stingray. Thank you.
Fantastic.